ॐ भद्रं करने पिशनुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्ये माक्षभिर्विचित्राः स्थिरायरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहितन्यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्ततातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
We'll go through the last section.
Nayam atma pravachanena labhyaha. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyaha. Namedhyana pahunashrutena. Namedhyana pahunashrutena. Yameva aisha vrinute tena labhyah. Tasyaisha atma vi vrinute tanum swam. Tasyaisha atma vi vrinute tanum swam.
So you have a typo there. You have vivrute. It should be vivrinu with a lingual nu. So vivrinute. So those of you who want to fill that in later, I can. Instead of you have vivrate, you see that? Plus vivrate. It should be vivrinu.
And down here.
Okay.
It's correct in
the. Oh, okay, yes, it is. It is
not
correct
up
on
here.
The. Yeah. Because up there, when they made the typo in the Sanskrit, it automatically transliterates. So if they made a mistake at the typo, it'll be there in the transliteration. So it should be vivrinute. Okay. Na ayam atma pravachanena labhyaha na medhaya na bahuna shrutena yam eva eshaha vrinute tena labhyaha tasya eshaha atma vi vrinate tanum swam.
Okay. Where's the typo?
And I'll show it to you later. It's the fourth line there.
Yeah.
You see vivrate?
Yeah.
It should be vivrinute. I'll change it for you.
Okay.
In the previous verse, we're talking about, if you recall, the one who is meditating on different objects that they might like to have. Right? So that meditation or that contemplation on these variety of objects leads to a desire, full-fledged desire, which then causes them to seek, to take actions to actually gain that object. And that desire will actually lead you to the object itself. It'll engage you and take you to the place where the object is. And even for a samsari, or for somebody who's committed to the karmakanda, even rituals are done in order to gain certain lokas or certain states of experience, because that's where I feel if I were in that loka, that field of experience, or in that world, I would be able to enjoy the objects of enjoyment that would make me happy. Okay. But for the person who's kritatmanaha, means for the person, for that person for whom the self is known, right? That person becomes a paryaptakamaha, one for whose all of their desires are fulfilled. For that person, all desires are fulfilled. They're fulfilled because of knowledge of the self, because the self is the very source of the ananda, which any desire is tapping. Right, so for the person who knows the self, they've then come to that very source of the ananda. And so for them, every desire is as well fulfilled. because they have the ananda, which is what any desire allows you to experience in the first place. So everything in the end results into the Atma. Even for the samsari, any ananda that they experience is the ananda of the Atma. So instead of doing the circuitous route, but the jnani is the one who just sits home in the ananda itself. So that person is called paryaptakamaha. And for that person, here itself, in this life itself, all of the desires are resolved. Well, because they're resolved into the self, which is the source of the ananda. That's why they're all resolved. Right? So the person is complete. So that being the case, the doubt can come up, well, if Shankara says it like this, if it's like this, you know, the one who gains the Atma as well gains everything, right? He must have a lot to do. There must be a very sophisticated and complex karmas and rituals that need to be done in order to allow that to take place, right? Because in fact, when we look at the karmakanda, the rituals, if you want something big, if you want something big, like to get to Swargaloka, for instance, a heavenly world, there are, it's very difficult, just in terms of rituals and the tapas and the things that a person has to do in order to earn that type of punya that would take you to that loka. It's very, very complex. So the bigger the want, the more complex the ritual, the more tapas, the more mantras and whatnot have to be done. And so here the karmakandi is going to say, well, if the one who gains the Atma fulfills all desires, it must be very difficult. There must be a lot to do. And so Shankara introduces this verse with that doubt. And then he says in the verse, it says, Na ayam atma, this atma, ayam atma, this self, na pravachanena labhyaha, na labhyaha. It's not going to be gained by pravachanena. This self is not gained by pravachana. Pravachana means the study and recitation of the Vedas. You know, like a pujari or a pundit in India, a Vedic pujari, will learn all of the Vedas and be able, in fact, to chant for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, backwards and forwards. So can have at his or her, his fingertips, usually women aren't doing this, but at his fingertips, can have the whole Veda and be able to recite it by heart. And that ability does give a certain amount of tejas and antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind. It does have a pala to it. You know, and it is a great accomplishment, but it's not self-knowledge. So any amount of pravachana, recitation of the Veda, is not going to give the Atma. So ayam Atma, this Atma, na labhyaha, it's not going to be gained. Labh means to gain, to obtain. Labhyaha, it can't be attained. It's potential, na labhyaha. Potential participle, it's not to be attained, can't be attained by pravachana. Na medha, medha is memory. Medha is that it's a combination of the word is like memory and intelligence combined. So say medha shakti, if you have medha shakti, if you read a book, you're able to remember what you read. If somebody tells a lecture, gives you a lecture, you can recite the lecture after you hear it. If you want to memorize something, you can read it and memorize it. In India, medha shakti is extolled, and many Indians have a tremendous medha shakti, a memory capacity that's absolutely unbelievable, memory capacity. One story I tell is when Swamiji was having his 60th birthday, it was a huge celebration at his ashram in Rishikesh. And pundits came from all over India. People came from all over the world, but the pundits came from all over India. And one famous, I think it was one of the Shankaracharyas, if I remember correctly, gave about a one-hour talk to the public that were there. There was maybe 800 or 900 people there. There was quite a few people. So he gave a talk mostly in Sanskrit and Tamil to the audience. Yeah. And so he talked on and on and on for 45 minutes or an hour. When he was done, Swamiji himself repeated the whole talk in the Sanskrit and Tamil, translating it into English. And when he was doing it, I was there listening to this. When he was doing it, the Shankaracharya was there going...
A sign of agreement.
That's Medha Shakti. And I've also told so many times that so many of the students at the ashram where I was studying there with Swamiji at Sandipani Sadhanalaya, you know, you would this one Prasad, his name was Prasad, I'd go and ask him, or somebody would ask him, you know, to tell us, what did Swamiji say in that class a few months ago? You know, I think it was on April 13th, I've got in my notes there, so 2 or 3 months ago, the morning class on the Mundaka. What did Swamiji say? And Prasad says, oh, well, he was talking about, and then just recite the whole class. That's Medha Shakti. Extraordinary. Extraordinary Medha Shakti. We'd all love to have that, I'm sure. And it's a boon. It's a vibhuti. It's a boon. It's a wonderful, wonderful capacity. But nimedhaya. And Shankara says, grantartha dharana shakti. Shaktiya, he says. Not by the shakti, by the capacity to dharana, to hold grantha artha, the meaning of a text, in your mind. Right? This atma, the self, is not gained by that. As much medha shakti as you have, as wonderful as it may be, as many times as you recite the Vedas perfectly, na ayam atma labhya, this atma is not going to be gained by that. Na bahuna shrutena, nor is it gained by much listening. Shruta, shru means to listen, and we use it when it's used in Vedic or in Upanishadic lore, it's talking about study, because the study is always heard, right? The Shastra, the Vedas, the first part of the Vedas and the Vedanta, and also the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, all these things are heard. They're learnt by hearing and repetition. You hear it. And that's how it's studied. Right? So it's something, it's a living tradition. It's a living oral tradition. So by that which is heard, you can also say by that which is studied. Okay? But here, say you can take it. It says, bahuna shrutena, by much study, or by much listening. And you can take that in a couple of different ways. Swamiji takes it in 2 or 3 different ways, also Shankara does. It can be, by much study, I can study the Vedas, I can study grammar, I can study the Upanishads, I can study astrology, I can study all of the Shastras, I can collect them all. Yeah. In fact, there's a story about Narada, who finally came to the teacher. Narada, he's always getting in some kind of trouble. Yeah. But Narada was feeling sad. And why am I feeling sad? And he goes to the teacher, the guru, and he says, I know all of the Shastras. I know this, and I know this, and I know this, and I know this, and I know this. I know all of this. And the teacher goes, yes, you know this, and you know this, and you know this too, and you know this, and you know this. You know all of these things. But you don't know yourself. And so you had to teach Narada. Because none of these things matter. And it's endless. Not only that, you can know this and this and this, there'll still be more to know. Right? And even in any given one subject, you can be such an expert in the field that somebody else will know more than you. And you could know more. You could know more and somebody else will know more. Okay? And that doesn't stop. If you have a lot of money, you could have more. In fact, the more money you have, the less you have. Right? Because you become aware of how much more money other people have than you. It's the same with power. It's the same with everything. So the more you have, the more you realize that you don't have. And so you can't win that battle. So here, na bahuna shrutena, no amount of study will help you here. Now you can also take this, and Swamiji writes about this in his bhasha. No amount of shravana, you know, No amount of shravana, even to the Upanishad, he says, and you can take, even to an Upanishad, even to this teaching, he says, unless you have a proper teacher, but you have to take it, and you'll see in the second verse, you have to take even farther than that, unless you have a proper mind. Right? If you have a proper teacher, and this knowledge is being unfolded, and you're listening, but you're listening so that you can become a Vedantic scholar, or so that you can learn the Bhagavad Gita so that you can go teach it to others, but there's no mumukshutvam there, right? Then your mind isn't listening to gain this another knowledge that the pramana has to give. It's listening to learn a subject matter. And so you're learning the subject matter, but you're not gaining the knowledge. And so even if the teacher is wielding this knowledge, the Upanishad, as a means of knowledge, if the student isn't receiving it as a means of knowledge, but is receiving it intellectually, you know, is receiving it like an intellectual exercise, then that's what they're getting. They're not getting the vision. So in fact, no amount of just listening, If we're using it in terms of bahuna shrutena, by much listening, even to the Vedanta Shastra, because he doesn't qualify it. He says he doesn't qualify it. He doesn't say to Vedanta, he doesn't say to the first part of the Vedas, like you could say, by no amount of listening to the first part of the Vedas. He doesn't say by no amount of listening to other Shastras. He says by no amount of listening does one obtain this Atma. So, what will allow you to gain it then? So, the first two lines. Na ayam Atma pravachanena labhyaha. Na medhya, not my Veda Shakti. Na bahuna shrutena, not by much listening. Swamiji says, but if you're listening to the Upanishads, to the Vedanta, and you have a proper teacher, then it'll be okay. But why will it be okay? It'll be okay because if you have the mumukshutvam, the teacher will make you listen properly. Right? Because of lectures like this, right? You know, because of talks like this, where you focus on exactly what that teaching methodology is, so that the student won't be listening to it as though it's a lecture meant to accrue information. It's not an information-giving lecture. It's a vision-giving lecture, which means that your mind has to resolve into what that knowledge is showing you. The knowledge that's coming out of the mouth of the teacher should be showing the student. The student should be seeing, right? Not collecting wisdom. Wisdom collector. Okay, so who gets it then? Yam eva esha vrinute tena labhyaha. There's two ways to take this. One is eshaha, the seeker, who is the vidvan, the seeker, the one who knows. It's that person, vrinute. The person who desires, vrinute. Vrinute means to desire, to want, to pray for. So the vidvan, the one who knows, the one who's the mumukshu, who's seeking this, the one who desires it, vrinute, prartana, means prays for it. This is what you must have. It's the mumukshu with the hair on fire. Now the example they use of the boy by the lake, and he's got a big jetta, a lot of hair on top of his head, and it catches on fire. Flame from the fire gets his hair. His hair is on fire now. What's he going to do? He's going to run to the lake and jump in immediately. Right? That's an example for the mumukshu. You know? So your focus, you need to solve this problem. The prarthana, the prayer is, I need to know who I am. I need to know what the truth of this is. I need to know, is there anything about me, this being here, that is real? Is there a God? What is this? I have to know. I'm not interested now in anything else. So the person who desires Eshaha, the Vidvan, Vidvan means the seeker who has this desire to know, you know, who's on the right track. This Vidvan alone, right, who desires yam atmanam. The Vidvan who desires the self, tena, by that desire, because of that desire, labhyaha, that atma is gained. So I'll say more about that in a minute, just to get that line. But he says, tasya, for him, or her, tasya, esha atma, this atma, this self, the vrinate, it reveals tanum swam, its own form. Tanum means its form, its being. Not form like a body, but its being, what it is. So its being, swam, its own being, tanum swam. This, it reveals its own, the being that it is, that in itself it is. It itself reveals it. Why? Because the Atma is not going to be revealed to you from outside. Right? There's no other, you're not going to get this self from anywhere else. The self that needs, that you need to know is the self that you are. Right? And so the self that you are has to reveal itself. Okay, now. The self that you are, the Atma that you are, already reveals it. It's already self-revealed as I am. So when you say, I am, I am, I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being, what's revealing that to you? In fact, it's that conscious being that reveals the thoughts in the mind, because of which the thoughts of the mind are known, because of which the emotions are known, because of which the body is known, because of which perceptions are known, because of which my sense organs are known. So this conscious being, who or what reveals the conscious being that I am? Nothing. Consciousness reveals itself. It's self-revelatory. It's self-evident. So nothing's revealing it. It reveals itself. But there's a problem, because this self-evident self, which is revealing itself, is revealing itself along with ajnanam, right? Along with self-ignorance. So I am self-revealed as I am a conscious being, which is perfect, but it's I am a limited conscious being, not I am a limitless conscious being. And so now, the very self, which is limitless, changeless consciousness, that exactly what you are, is taken by the mind to belong to be itself. And so the being that you are, which is actually invariable and changeless and limitless, the mind says, belongs to me, and I, the mind, am changing and emotional and on a roller coaster ride. Right? I have many different types of thoughts, many different types of emotions, many different types of feelings which I can't control. And I'm finite because I exist in this physical body. And this physical body is going to die. And so I may die, or maybe I don't really know. But right now I know that this body dies, and I don't know if I'm going to outlast it. This is the samsari. This is the ajnanam, right? And so the self is illumining this chatter. The self, yourself, is the invariable that is aware of the one who's saying, I don't know who I am. The invariable, limitless self illumines the mind that is saying, I don't know who I am, and I am constantly changing, and as far as I know, I'm different from you, and I suppose that I'm going to die. This conversation that is born of ignorance has for its being the invariable self-evident self. But the invariable self-evident self, right, doesn't talk, doesn't say anything, because it's changeless. Your being is changeless. Like the sun, it illumines what is there. As though the sun were pervading me, you know, in the sense that the sun illumines whatever's going on. It doesn't do anything. It just simply illumines. like that, I'm the very truth of everything, but I'm not a participant in the sense that my being doesn't change, it illumines. As thoughts take place, my being is not thinking, it is illumining thought. When emotions are going on, my being is not having emotions, it's illumining the very substance, the very being of the emotions, but itself is not changing. And so now what has to happen is that this self-evident self, which is shrouded in ignorance, shrouded not in the sense of being covered so that it can't be seen, but shrouded in the sense of the body and the mind and the sense organs in the world, lends itself for the superimposition of my being upon it and it upon my being. So the changeless me, my own presence, right? Superimposed on the mind becomes me, and the mind superimposed upon me, right? I become changing and emotional and smart or stupid or whatever the qualities of the mind are. It's the same with the body. I, the conscious being, if the conscious me is superimposed on the body, then I become the body. If the body is superimposed upon me, right? Then I become subject to the birth, old age, and death of the body. So what has to happen here is that this self that I am, my mind needs to want to know. I need to seek this self. I don't want to seek. Say if the mind, as a mumukshu, I need to know this self. I don't need to become a scholar in the Vedanta Shastra. You may become a scholar in the Vedanta Shastra. You may become a Sanskrit scholar. But becoming a scholar if that's where your buddhi is, if that's where your drishti is, you know, your prarthana, your prayer is, oh, let me be a scholar in the Vedanta Shastra. You know, let me be a Sanskrit scholar. That's what I want. Then that's what you'll get. You'll be a pundit. You'll be a Sanskrit scholar who's a great pundit. And the great pundit will tell you, you know, I do have all of the Shastra Jnanam here. I'm not a Jnani. They're saying. They don't mind saying. They're absolutely clear on this. I'm not a Jnani. I don't have self-knowledge, but I do have the Vedanta Shastra. I can teach it to you. I myself don't know because I don't have vairagya. I don't have the vairagya. I'm a householder, you know, and I want these various things, you know. And so I've never gained this knowledge myself. But I do have the Shastra Jnanam, the knowledge of the Shastra. And I do have the Sanskrit. And they're revered also for their knowledge. But for that pundit, to be a jnani, the drishti has to, the prayer, what they're seeking has to be different. It's not that they're seeking Shastra Jnanam, they're seeking Atma Jnanam. That I have to know myself. And that's the mamukshutvam. And that is the qualification. No, he says, no amount of pravachana, chanting or recitation, no amount of committing to memory texts or praying for medha shakti, no amount of listening will allow you to have this. These are not the means. But as Swamiji says in his bhasha, all of these things are wonderful also. And they're helpful. The Veda Pravachana, you know, the chanting and recitation of the Veda, chanting all of these things are so wonderful for gaining antakarana shuddhi and gaining attitude, gaining a beautiful mind, capacity of the mind, working with your mind, putting text to memory. All of these things are wonderful, but they are what they are. If you take these things, if you take these type of wonderful qualities and wonderful pursuits to have anything to do with Atma Jnanam, that's the problem. If you take that as the means, because then you're not understanding what is really primary for a person to be able to get this. What is really primary is the mumukshutvam. Mumukshutvam means the desire for liberation. It means that mind wants to know this self. And when that is so, then when the Upanishad, remember, this is an Upanishad. The Upanishad is saying this. This Upanishad is a teaching. This Upanishad is giving this vision to the student. And as it gives this vision, it is saying this to the student. You know? As it's giving this knowledge, it's saying this to the student. What will allow you to gain this knowledge is your desire for it. Then when that is so, when this knowledge, which is the Upanishad, and this knowledge, which is a pramana, right? It's a means of knowledge. The Upanishad is a means of knowledge to make you see. When that is the condition of your mind, that you want to know yourself, then as these words come out of the mouth of the teacher, they go into the mind of the student as the pramana that they're meant to be, because the student is sitting ready and waiting, let me know myself, let me know who I am. And so when the mind is available to the pramana in that way, then this self, which is already self-evident, just as ahamatma, I am the self, it now recognizes aham brahmasmi, the self that I am. This self that I am, this self-evident self that I am, is Brahman, is limitless, is the whole. Because that is the task of the Upanishad as a pramana. That is the vision that the Upanishad has to give. And so it says so clearly, the vidvan, the seeker, this Eshaha vidvan, vinute, who desires, who prays for this, who wants this as a boon, who wants what? Yam Atman, who wants this Paramatma, who wants to know, right? Because you don't want to know. You don't want to gain yourself as an object. So if you say, I want to gain myself, it means I want to know myself. Because the Atma. So I want to know the self. It's Tena, it's by that. Right? By that desire itself, Labhyaha, that this Atma is attained. And how is it attained? For that person, Esha Atma Divinite, it reveals itself. It reveals its own self. Right? Because it is there as that. Is there as that. So when the teacher points it out, the student is there to see it. Now when Swamiji did this reading, he saw it's an unusual reading. I haven't found in the Sanskrit, but he saw it, and I see very clearly too. There's another way to take this line, because in this final section, they're talking about the mukshu, the vidvan, the teacher, the guru, the one, the mahatma, who has this knowledge, nishtam, this knowledge, and they're talking about the student. This whole last section. So Swamiji said, you can also take like this. It starts with, the first two lines are the same. This Atma can't be gained by study of the Vedas, or by Medha Shakti, you know, or by much listening. Whom this Jnani, the Acharya, the one who the Acharya chooses, it is gained by him. So here the Yam stands for the student. The one, Swamiji says like this, the one who the teacher chooses to teach. Teacher meaning the one who knows. Right? Because all of this, remember, in Upanishad, it's always a dialogue between the guru and the sisha. And the student will approach the teacher with sticks in hand, which is also in this Upanishad, and prostrate to the teacher and ask to be taught. And then the teacher will not necessarily teach the student right away. The teacher is not going to teach, it's traditionally speaking. The teacher, if the student's not ready to be taught, the teacher won't teach. It'll send the student off to do this or that work, or make the student do seva for some time. Or if the student comes to the teacher and wants to be taught, so that they can go to America and make some money teaching a few verses in the Gita. You know, Swamiji jokes that, because there are some sadhus like that. Oh, Swamiji, you know, just, you know, teach me 10 verses. Why do you want to teach me 10 verses of the Gita? And Swamiji just say, why do you want to learn just 10 verses? You sit here, I'll teach you. You just sit here, I'll teach you. No, just teach me. That's enough. You just teach me 10 verses, then I can go to America, you know, and you know, be a guru there. So to those things. These were especially in the old days, in the 60s, you know. And so this teacher might say no. He might decide not to teach it. So Swamiji took this like this. In the context of the whole Upanishad and the context of this section, it can also mean, grammatically, it's absolutely correct, Eshaha means Acharyaha. This, the teacher who chooses whom. Right? The teacher, whomever the teacher chooses alone to teach, by him it's obtained, it is gained. And so, looking at it in that way, that's putting the emphasis on the necessity for the guru-sisha relationship and the necessity for this knowledge to be taught. In other words, you have to look like this. Yourself is already self-evident. The self is already the self. In other words, the self that you are, it's already self-evident and it's already Brahman. You already are all of this. You already are the whole. And so there's no way for you to become that. There's no way for you to gain that. Because it's already how it is. So now the question, then if it's already how it is, why don't you know it? If you could know it, by this time you would know it. Right? The problem, the reason that you don't know it, you are that, but you don't know it, is because of the pramanas, the means of knowledge that you have at your disposal, are only meant for objects in the world. They only work within duality. And all of them are blessed by have for their being consciousness. Right? The consciousness which is not one of their objects, but which is their very substance. And so wherever you search to gain this knowledge, no matter how much ignorance you remove using your means of knowledge, you're not touching the self-ignorance. And so to touch the self-ignorance, how to remove the self-ignorance with the means of knowledge you have available? So we would say, no, you can't. You can't do it with the means of knowledge that you have available. You need a pramana for it. And that pramana, in this tradition, is in the form of this guru-sisha relationship. And so then the teacher does not go out to find the student in the tradition. You know, the teacher does not advertise for students. The tradition is that when a student becomes a mamukshu, truly, the student becomes a mamukshu, that student will find a teacher. And that's Bhagavan's promise. It's the promise of the Upanishads. So when the student becomes that, when the person becomes a mamukshu, they seek out the teacher. Right? They go up in the Himalayas, you know. They go up into the Himalayas and they find their guru. Romantically speaking. You know, you know, if we go back, we have to go back in time. But romantically speaking, it's like that. The student seeks the teacher. And then the student is the one that seeks the teacher, prostrates to the teacher, and says, hey, Bhagavan, please teach me. And then makes an offering and all of this. And then that teacher has to say, yes, I will teach you. If the teacher says, yes, I will teach you, then the student, and think of it like this. If reading it like this, it's the other side. It's exactly the same thing, but it's just looking at it from the standpoint of the teacher. Because now, for the student to seek out the teacher, to find the teacher, then to ask the teacher, please teach me. And for the teacher then to accept, yes, I will teach you. that Atmalabha has to be there, right? That student is a mumukshu, has sought out the teacher. The teacher accepts that student as a mumukshu, as one who desires liberation. And if the teacher accepts the student as a mumukshu, which is really the only thing that's in question here, you know, then the teacher teaches the student, and the teacher teaching the student, then what? What happens? The Atma, which is the self of the student, reveals itself. Right? How the teacher's not revealing it. The teacher's not revealing the Atma. The teacher is pointing to the Atma, which reveals itself. The teacher is giving the knowledge, right, in the sense, using the shabda, using words, to make the student recognize what is already there. So the self-evident, the self-evident being that I am already, I now recognize through the strength of the pramana, through the power of this teaching, I now see clearly that I am the whole. Right? But nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. What reveals to me that I am the whole? Right? Nothing reveals it to me. The ignorance is removed. Right? The ignorance is removed. Nothing else happens. But with the removal of the ignorance, the wholeness of my being becomes self-evident and obvious. Mm-hmm. So I recognize this. The Atma that I am is Brahman. See how it is? So you can read Swamiji's Bhasha on that. It's very interesting. It's not here in Shankara. Shankara didn't look at it this way. Neither did this commentary. But so Swamiji used it at the end of his commentary on this verse. He said, you know, you can take it this way. And actually, when I look at it, I mean, it's grammatically so correct, and it also pulls it together. So it's nice. Sometimes with these verses, Shankara will often do this also. There'll be different ways, very different ways of reading the verse. But both ways, or three, usually there's two ways, they'll both be correct. And that gives a richness to the verse. It's also in the Brahma Sutras, in the little aphorisms, you know, little short little aphorisms. They can be multidimensional, and that's as long as what is being said is valid, then those different meanings are used and commented upon. And so when Swamiji was reading this, he may have seen it from a different text that I don't have. But it could also be that when he's reading this, he saw this meaning in it also. And that meaning holds so clearly with the chapter and with this particular Upanishad also, that you could take it like that. So, but that was really, really nice. Let's stop there. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamidachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
You know, removal of ignorance isn't like gaining all these other capacities like great memory or great chanting. You know, those are all acquisitions. And removing the ignorance is not quite in the same category.
It's not in the same category in reference to the self. Removing self-ignorance is different from any other type of knowledge, because every other type of knowledge requires an acquisition. In this sense, that if I gain knowledge of this painting, for instance, the first thing that has to happen is I need a means of knowledge to go out and capture the painting, because otherwise the painting's not with me. I'm not carrying the painting around inside. And so I need a vritti, a thought modification of the painting. And if I don't have that thought modification, there is no painting experience there, right? So our first thing that has to happen is I have to gain an experience of the object. And then gaining the experience of the object, I also illumine the object. Both are happening simultaneously, but if you think of it, I gain the vritti, and then that vritti is known. See that? So if the thing is that in this case, and this is all knowledge in the world is like that, right? I have to gain the experience, and then that experience becomes known. So the self-knowledge is not like that, because the self-experience is already here. You can't gain it. It's already absolutely present as yourself. So the self-experience is not something that comes and goes or that you can ever be away from. So now the problem is not going to at all be gaining the experience of the self, like gaining the experience of a painting or any other object. That experience is self-evident. So now the problem is not that, gaining the experience, it's removing, right, the ignorance. So that's why we say, especially in reference to self-knowledge, it's ajnana nivritti. Ajnana nivritti, the removal of ignorance. It's not the gain of knowledge, it's the removal of ignorance. You see, well, in all cases, it's removal of ignorance, but in the world, you have to gain the experience to remove the ignorance. Here, you don't have to gain the experience. So that's a very critical difference. And what... Because that's not normally understood, a seeker, a person who's on a spiritual path, will be thinking of gaining self-knowledge in the same way they think of gaining knowledge of an object in the world, because that's all that we know. And so then you want to gain the experience, like through a meditative experience. We'll gain the experience of the Atma, like we would gain the experience of the painting. Right? And so that's what sets the seeker on an endless trip, because you're always looking on an internal flight toward the acquisition of an experience, which is exactly what we know to do out here. You see? So it's so significant, because it will mean that I'm always looking elsewhere internally. I'm always looking elsewhere in order to have the experience of the self, so that I can gain it.
So what type of mind does one pray for? Because, you know, usually all of the knowledges, you need a certain capacity of mind and focus and, you know, a big, say, IQ or something like that. This type of mind that is present for the removal of ignorance, what type of mind? I mean, it's...
All you need is the... You need to have average intelligence so that you can follow the teaching. You need to be intelligent. You don't need to be a genius, but you need to, you know, be able to follow logic. It's a normal intelligence. What do you say? I wouldn't say average or above. Or just normal. You have to be a normal person. Normal intelligence. And then, as a person with normal intelligence, then that mumukshutvam. That's what it is. The desire to know. If you have normal intelligence and the desire to know, that's what it is. All the other things, you may, you know, have this talent or that talent. Those things are fine. Those are good. You may, you know, love Sanskrit. I love Sanskrit. I study Sanskrit all the time. But Sanskrit is not the reason that I have knowledge. And it's not going to be the reason you have knowledge either. You know? You'll have Sanskrit, that's all.
I would also think you would have to have an openness of mind.
Yeah.
Now that's where that's the second, isn't it? Shraddha. Shraddha van labhate jnanam. This famous phrase Swamiji quotes all the time in the Bhagavad Gita. I don't remember exactly which verse it is. I should look that up for you. It's another one of those little lines. Shraddha van means the one who has shraddha. Labhate gains jnanam. Right? The one who has shraddha, that one gains knowledge. Shraddha means what? That because this knowledge needs to be taught to you, right? Because the pramana for this knowledge is not connected to your body like your sense organs are, it needs to be taught. That means that you have to have shraddha in the teacher and the teaching both in order to have your mind available. So what does shraddha mean? Then it becomes important because this is we're all afraid of this because we think, you know, we have to believe in somebody or have faith in somebody who can be led on a trip, which is all true. But that's not what shraddha means. Shraddha means that for whatever reason, they actually talk about it as grace, Ishvara Anugraha, as the grace of God. For some reason, when you're exposed to the teaching that can actually free you, your mind says, yes, I want to learn that.
Yeah.
There's a yes. It says, yes, there's something there I want to learn. And you're not turned off by the teacher. You could, the teacher could be teaching Vedanta, but there's something about the teacher you don't like, so you can't listen to that person. So the teacher has to be somebody who is not in the way of the teaching. I would put it that way. The teacher has to not be in the way, so that when you're in the class, your mind is just using that pramana. So there's no obstruction there. So there's something in you that says, yes, I can study this, I want to study this, I want to learn this. And then your mind's available. And you could think even in the world, it's like that. Something has to tell you, this is what I want to learn. And I want to learn from this person. And then your mind's open to learn. That's a big thing. It's a big thing to be in a class where your mind is available. To be available, you have to be interested in it. There has to be something telling you, yes, this is what I want. And so Swamiji will call it faith-pending understanding. In other words, that gives your mind the go-ahead to listen and to learn. Not as an endless thing, but to listen and to learn, so that openness resolves itself in the knowledge. So that shraddha is considered very important, because otherwise you're not available.
When I understand the dynamic of projecting yourself onto the body, mind, sense organs, and that
unusual jealousy.
But in terms of the creation, could you just refresh my memory?
How that works?
Yes.
It works in terms of sat. Okay, well, I can do it in chit also, but it's sat, it's really obvious.
Yeah.
When I eat through my thing, does everybody sick to death of?
No.
Okay, now you like it more, okay. If I say, the wall is, the rug is, we take it completely for granted, this is. But this is a superimposition. The isness that I'm giving to this is my own non-objectifiable being. I can prove that none of these things, what we call name and forms, has any existence at all in its own right. But because everything's infinitely divisible, everything comes into being and goes out of being, so it has no being in its own right. And yet, the whole universe, we give being to it is, it is, it is, it is, and we give it across the board. We give being to every thought in my mind, every mood, every emotion, to the ahankara, to this body, to the entire creation. But the fact of it is that the being which the creation enjoys is the noun, not the adjective. The being is Brahman. It is myself, actually. It's non-object. It's the very substance. But now what's happened is that being is superimposed onto these objects. So as long as this lamp exists, it is, right? As though the isness that it enjoys is dependent on the lamp being here, right? Whereas the isness, the lamp is dependent on the lamp being here, but the isness is not.
That's kind of like we break up the being.
As though it belongs to an object, and then when the object is gone, that the being of the object is gone too. But the being of the object is invariable. I am the being of the object.
It's not
this body or mind sense organs, but the nature of the Atma is the being of the object.
It's such a different way to look at existence or the definition of existence. It's almost counterintuitive. You know?
It's the opposite of how we view it.
That's why it's so hard.
That's why you have to listen more than once. You're welcome.